It's finally ready. There is a link that you can click on in the show notes to take you to the ticket page, free tickets for making it 500.
Yes.
It's actually happening. Guys, we did it. We've been talking about it.
We didn't do anything.
Yeah, we didn't do anything.
Carolina Shoes did it.
Yeah.
They, and we apologize because they accidentally, well, there was a little communication. It should have been more communication. And I'll tell those guys we got to talk a little bit more often. But they put out the link before we had a chance to put out the link. They published it. So we wanted to put it out for our patrons. The patrons got it now, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Sorry, there wasn't that exclusive thing. But
well, I don't think there's a like a scarcity of seats. Somebody said, maybe it was Graz, said that it's going to be in like an auditorium. I thought it was a gym, but I think it's an auditorium. Mm-hmm. And there's several hundred seats there. So, you know, I think there'll be plenty of room for everybody. All 15 people that are going to come have a seat.
If you're in the New York area, cop in. I'll give everybody a ride. Take my big truck with lots of seats.
Take your Woody. You can cram a lot of people in the back of the Woody.
Oh, yeah. They're all just going to have to pile on like college students in the 50s. Remember, they still try and like get as many
kids
in a car.
Hanging out the windows and stuff. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. That's funny.
Well, so it's going to be September 6th. The page that they put up says 11. It's funny how little we know about this. 11 to 5 p.m. 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday, September 6th. So it's at Galvin Middle School in Wakefield, Massachusetts. And there's like there's a bunch of people coming. There's another, let's see. So Graz is going to be there. Special live recording of Copper Pigs podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Jackman, Derek.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We're going to, those guys are excited to do the panel. So we're going to do the panel, and I'm waiting on to hear from a special guest to see if he's willing to come out. So I'm still waiting on that. I'll tell you guys in the after show. And the guys are excited to do the panel, the Q&A panel with everybody, including Justine. Justine's working, so she said she's going to see if she can peel away and come hang out with us on that day. She's working on a set. So we'll see. Might be all six of us on set, on stage.
Very cool.
Doing a Q&A, and we'll tell some funny stories from behind the scenes.
So and exciting. Then we're going to record an episode that's going to be part Q&A and part not.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know.
This is what we talked about in our little meeting, was that we would take a couple of cards from the audience, Q&A cards, so we could do topics. So we can kind of go through the cards. This might be a little clumsy right now, but we'll figure it out. Give us a topic and we'll do like 1 minute on a topic.
Oh, okay.
But keep the same cards on hand. So you put a topic and then a question. So we'll do the topics first and then we'll do the questions after. Makes sense?
That works. Yeah.
Cool.
So we'll do like speed topics, which is kind of like a question, but a little bit more broader.
Yeah. All right.
Well, 1 point. So a topic and a pointed question on the blue square cards like David Letterman used to hold.
Nice.
I'll get the cards.
Well, it's going to be a good time regardless of what we do.
Yeah. I mean, the first one came together kind of seat of the pants, and it was great in retrospect. It was a great day.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I think as long as we get to the same spot in the same window of time, I think we'll have fun no matter what goes on.
People still talk about that first event 25 years later.
Yeah.
It was only 25 years ago?
Yeah.
It may have been more.
Seems like 40. Yeah, we're looking forward to it. We got to book some flights and stuff, but we will see everybody there. So make sure you go and reserve a spot. Like I said, it's free, but they want to kind of get a head count. So just go to the link that's in the show notes, reserve your spot. And, you know,
is there hotel packages yet?
I haven't seen any. They're supposed to be.
Okay.
I heard that there were going to be, but I have not heard.
Hold on for that, because there will be hotel packages.
Yep. Cool. Well, what else is going on? What's up with you guys?
What else is going on? Next weekend here in East Durham, this is a little announcement, there's a thing called the Field of Tools. So Austin, who just called me before we started, I got to text him, is putting on Maker Camp. So Maker Camp happens October 10th, but the Field of Tools happens August 8th. And we're going to try and do this as an annual thing where people come from all over the country with a truck full of industrial equipment, table legs, lathes, power hammers. We're going to try and make it like a heavy industrial show to hand tool show. And lots of guys are coming. We got Keith Rucker coming from Georgia's coming, and Andrew from Blacksmith Tools is sending up a bin of stuff to me, and then I'm going to organize it for him. And you got a lot of local guys that can bring their equipment. So that's the Field of Tools.
That's pretty cool.
In East Durham. So that's coming up. So that's, and then I'm going to have a house full of guests, of course, who are coming into town for that. So I'm organized.
Are you taking stuff out there to get rid of?
Yeah, I got one of my flatbed trucks. We were going to load it up with big tools, but then I'm also going to tell people I'm going to put like tags on things in the shop so that I don't have to move them, because it's only a mile away from my shop. And I'll leave the door open. I'll just tell people, go look at stuff. If there's anything you want to buy, anything with a red sticker on it is going to be available. It's just big machines, little stuff I'll keep.
So we need to put a bet here. How many tools do we think he is going to add to his collection?
Well, you're going to laugh.
Least, if you don't get at least one bandsaw out of that weekend, I'm going to be disappointed.
All right. So did I tell you guys this story of the anchor at Maker Camp last year? So David Woods is one of our crew from Georgia. And David says to me at Maker Camp, he's like, you got a bandsaw? You got a handheld bandsaw? I want to cut something up. I'm like, yeah, there's one in my shop. Go grab it. I go, what do you want to cut? He goes, oh, I got an anchor. Somebody brought me an anchor. I'm like, an anchor? What kind of anchor? Go, how big is it? He goes, oh, it's big. Goes, it's all wrought iron. I'm like, you're going to cut up an anchor? He's like, well, yeah, I got to get it in my car to get it back to Georgia. I'm going to use it in the blacksmith shop. I'm like, how old is this anchor? He goes, I don't know, about 150 years old. I'm like, I'm not going to let you cut up 100 feet. I go, where is it? And at the time, he goes, it's in front of your shop. We used the forklift to get it off. So it was in front of my shop down the road. I didn't know. Like, everything happens like around me. I didn't even pay attention. I'm like, so I went and looked at it. And I said to him, I go, throughout the weekend, I had got a chance to look at it. And when I found him, I'm like, you're not cutting that thing up. I go, I'm going to buy it from you to save you from ruining it.
Wow, that's funny.
And so I owe David $700 for this anchor. It's like 7 feet tall. It probably weighs like 400, 500 pounds. It's a huge antique anchor you would see on the side of like a pirate ship. It's got like the big whoop and like the ball at the top, and it has like a big square like in a diamond shape. So that you can put a big chunk of wood through it so that when it hits the ocean floor, like it toggles. And so it doesn't have the wood. You'd usually see the anchor with the big piece of wood at the top. It does not have the wood on it. So I was going to maybe sawmill up a big chunk of wood and then throw it on my front lawn, let everybody think I'm a pirate.
You should put it on your front lawn and then make a giant chain attached to your house. So it looks like your house is anchored down to the front yard.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to make a giant
go partway into the ground.
That's a good idea. I've been wanting to make a giant wooden chain. I have this big, long timber. I was like, I can make that into a chain. That would be fun. But anyway, so that's the story of the anchor. And the anchor is still sitting out in front of the shop. Every time I go there, I'm like, I got to get that to the house.
You're like, somebody's going to steal that anchor. Wait, no. That's cool.
I'll find a picture of it.
But you haven't paid for it yet.
No, Dave is coming this week. I owe him $700, maybe more. I don't know if there's interest or anything, but I owe him money for it.
David, if you're listening, make sure you get your $700 plus interest.
Plus interest.
Cool. Well, so that's coming up, the Field of Tools. What have you been working on, Jimmy?
Sorry, I got to clear my throat. Working on the Caddy. The Caddy's really coming into its own. It's really, remember I said early on how it's each move I make dictates the next move. We'll talk a little bit about this for the topic, but it's really designing itself at this point. It's like Christine, like, it's like, oh, okay, don't forget to do this. It's like, it's almost leading the way. Every time I do something, I step back. I'm like, oh, I need a piece of material there. Oh, this line really needs to land there. This thing has to happen there. And it's really just every time I step back, I see things that almost the questions answer themselves. It's kind of hard to explain how that is because I don't have a roadmap or drawing or anything. I just have a couple of quick sketches that I actually published those sketches on my Instagram when I drew them over pictures on Procreate on the iPad.
So it's those telling you what it wants.
Exactly. So those sketches that I did on Procreate, which are on my Instagram, That's really the only guidance I've had. I haven't done any 3D imagery or anything like that. It's not, obviously, you know, it's not really my thing. It's just something I'm just not good at. So I usually don't think of it. But it's really coming together nicely. I was able to figure out the pump jacks on the doors, so the struts, so that when you open the doors, they hiss open.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a bit of a challenge. Those things are very persnickety to figure out. It's like when you get them, they're perfect. But until you find that spot, you know, every box hatch lid has like four sets of screw holes until you find the right spot.
So I watched your video, and I've watched some of the Instagram videos of that. And when you close a door, it's so satisfying. It sounds like it closes perfectly. And then the wing doors, when they open up, they just, it looks so impressive and satisfying.
It really works well. I got to reinforce the wooden doors though, because there's so much stress. It's going to be one day I'll go to close the door and it'll just rip off the stress on the struts. I got 80 pound struts. So each strut holds 80 pounds and the door won't weigh nearly that much. What's funny to me is I've seen a few comments on the last video and even the earlier videos. They're like, I hope you're accounting for the weight of the wood you're putting on there. Like the amount of steel versus the amount of wood that takes up the same volume, the steel is definitely like 4 times heavier than the wood, 5 times heavier. So some people, I guess it's just practical engineering. Certain people lack. The wood it's like a lightweight canoe on the back of this boat versus all that steel, especially
and
the
when
steel.
When that car was made, they were like, doesn't matter how much it weighs, put all the steel on.
Like 10-gauge steel. Like the doors are like, I could literally hit it with a hammer and the hammer would bounce off. I'd have to like kind of wind up like a baseball pitcher to put a dent in that door with a hammer. Yeah. Nowadays, you just you breathe on a car and it dents. But that's coming together nicely. This weekend, I'm probably going to do the steering wheel over in leather. So I'm probably going to, the steering wheel's all cracked. And I was like, it's a perfect opportunity for me to do like a little leather video. And that's, I'll do that. I got to figure out a couple of things, you know, from the filmmaker's point of view. Me hand stitching a leather on a steering wheel, would have probably passed as a full 6-minute video 10 years ago. But I got to figure out how to get a little bit more meat in there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to. That's probably what I'm going to do. What is today's Wednesday? So that's like a 1-day build. So that's like a 1-day video that I can maybe make like an 8 or 9 minute video. So we'll see if there's a couple of other things I could add to it.
A few years back, and this wouldn't maybe help you, but a few years back, I was looking at redoing a steering wheel on the Greenland Cruiser because it's just the finish has broken off. You know, it's like gotten all crumbly.
Yeah, the same with mine.
So I found a video of a guy, and I don't remember who it was now, who was refinishing old steering wheels. Mm-hmm. And he went through the process of like building up. You really strip it down, and then you build up this kind of epoxy new. You strip it down to almost the metal, mm-hmm. and then you're building up this tube around the curve and getting that to be in a place that then you can start shaping and getting it smooth and uniform. It was way more work than I was expecting. And I was thinking of,
I'm glad you said that.
The cracks, you're just going to fill the gaps and stuff. But he like took it down past that and then built it back up and then took it down to where it's smooth again. So,
yeah. See that you just gave me something I wasn't going to do. It's all cracks and stuff. And, Rob mentioned, he's like, you're going to fill the gaps. And in mine, I was like, nah. But there are a couple of wide gaps that I don't know if I'll ever drive this car enough, but if I don't fill those gaps as I use the steering wheel, the leather will start to show those voids, as it wears. So that is a good idea. So that'll be part of the video is me filling in the cracks.
Jimmy, in what year did we go from tiny, thin steering wheels to the big 3-inch diameter steering wheels that we have today? Like when I drive the Impala, you could wrap your fingers around it twice. Yeah. Like it was so so tiny. And now on my truck, I can't even touch my thumb and fingers.
I say that really happened in the late 70s, early 80s, when they started really doing leather wrapped steering wheels. It's probably from Europe. The Europeans probably put leather on the steering wheels first, and like probably some of the supercars like the Ferraris and Lamborghinis, I'm guessing, because it's true. Like I have couple of 70s trucks, and they all have the skinny steering wheel, but then they get fatter as you get into the 80s when they start putting, like when I get in the two Chevy trucks I have, they're a few years apart, but they have nice fat steering wheels with like the beautiful stitching. And me thinking about steering wheels, obviously, in the last few days, all that stitching is hand-stitched. I don't think there's a machine that could do that interlaced. It's, if you look at a good, like most modern cars have like a leather-wrapped steering wheel with the stitching that's on the inside. The stitching is always a crosshatch, like laces on a shoe.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no machine that could do that. That's all hand-done. So when you think that there's production run of a car of 100,000 cars that has a leather-wrapped steering wheel, that's all hand-done. I can only imagine.
Maybe. There are some of the manufacturing machines are pretty insane. So I wouldn't put it past a machine to be able to do that.
And you know what I saw last night that reminds me of a similar thing? There's a new zipper out, because I follow all this clothing, all these clothing manufacturing vlogs. And there's a new zipper out by YKK. And you know how a zipper usually has its seam allowance, a piece of fabric attached to either side. Now there's a new zipper. It's just the zipper itself. It seems like it's mostly plastic. And there's no seam allowance. It's meant to just add right to the edge of the fabric. And the way it adds right to the edge of the, it seems crazy. The way it adds right to the edge of the fabric is there's a specialized sewing machine that weaves in between the teeth. Imagine having the timing wrong on that.
Whoa.
Keep an extra set of teeth around. I got to keep a couple of extra needles around. They didn't show how it stitches, but they showed it up close. And the stitching, it almost looks like a sailor knot. It microscopically, it wraps around each tooth and then goes back into the fabric and then like knots itself and then goes to the next tooth.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's in a quick machine manufacturing technique, but they designed a specialized sewing machine to sew it right on the edge of a fabric. And it's all nylons and stuff, because I don't think you could have an open edge cotton fabric unless it's hemmed. You couldn't.
That was going to be my question, is like, you're already going to be treating the edge of the fabric. You would have to, I would think. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know everything about fabrics, but that seems like a lot of effort for something that doesn't actually change anything.
Yeah, well, what's
the advantage of having a different kind of zipper that doesn't have that seam allowance?
Because you look like you're in a Star Trek suit, basically. You know, it just makes it look more futuristic, slicker. That was the examples they were showing.
Gotcha.
And then you could have a zipper on something small too, like a purse or whatever, or in different inconspicuous spots. You could have a zipper that does. You ever have like a zipper on your lapel or something, on like a sport jacket, and then like the seam allowance kind of like bundles it all up. Anyway, I'm just guessing, but you know, the zipper, it's one of those things where you think like a zipper has been around for probably 120 years, right? And finally, there's some innovation. There's always room for innovation on anything. That's a topic.
Crazy. I'm trying to find a picture of it. I want to see what it looks like.
Zipper innovation. And what I saw, it was on Instagram, and what I saw, now that I'm talking about it, my phone's going to feed me 16 versions of it.
It's always listening.
You know, I showed you guys like a Volkswagen bug project I'm thinking about before we get started, which I'll talk about eventually later, but later in life, not later today. But I was talking the other day to a couple of friends of mine, and I was like, you know, the things that got away right down the block from me, this guy had a property like mine, but he was like old and could care less about anything anymore. And his property was littered with projects, half done, undone, tools rusting in the woods. And one of the things he had, and I kicked myself for not buying it. He had a Volkswagen microbus, the 60s version of a Volkswagen bus. Cut and attached, so the wheelbase was like 4 feet apart. It was just a shell on rolling wheels. It had no interior, obviously. Oh. no trans, no drive shaft or anything. And he said $2,000, and I was like, I kicked myself now. I wish I would have bought it, because I went back a couple weeks later, and he's like, nah, I sold everything. And last night I was telling somebody that story, and last night the phone fed to me a reel of a guy who had taken the front of a bus and the back of a bug and welded them together. It's insane how like the AI can listen to what we're talking about, decipher it, literally listen to it like as if a human, and make those nuanced decisions like, oh, this guy likes when bugs are cut in half and reattached. Let me feed him one of those images.
You're lucky it didn't show you actual bugs being cut in half and you just get it. Yeah.
Now that you said that, it's going to be like, well, oh, you like weird entomology? Let's take a look.
Yep. Here we go.
Crazy. Well, David, what have you been doing?
I have a video coming out tomorrow where I took a thrift store table and turned it into a hanging wall cabinet.
That looks amazing.
I just sent you guys the before and after photos. And so I went to the Salvation Army and got this table for $8. And it has two glass inserts on the top. And I removed them and cut the top down the middle to make it into two doors. And then I filled those where the glass was with the Kumiko pattern, which is my first time ever doing that. And it came out, I think it came out really good. So when I bought the table, I planned on keeping it a table and just making it a better table. But in my last video, I asked people for suggestions to kind of allow people to have a say in the next video. And so many people said, you know, you should turn it into a shadow box or a wall hanging cabinet. And I was like, you know what? You're right. And then also in that last video, I talked about some things that I got started but hadn't finished. And one of the things was I was starting to learn the Kumiko woodworking technique. And lots of people commented, like, you got to replace the glass with the Kumiko. And so I did. And I'm kind of glad that I asked those questions in the previous video because it got me out of my own head, because I get something and I think, oh, this is what I'm going to do to it. And other people were like, no, this is what you should do to it, which is an even better idea. So this little crappy table turned into quite the transformation, I think.
It looks crazy.
It does. So explain the process. I mean, I think I can figure out the process of doing that inlay. What's it called? Kumiko?
Kumiko. K-U-M-I-K-O. And I believe I'm saying that right.
So explain to me like the process that you did to make that, please.
So you start off with a grid pattern. So you have it's kind of like the frame that's going to hold all the tiny little pieces, and they have the little half lap joints within this grid pattern. Yeah. So you can fit all your pieces together. And so depending on which direction you go, that grid pattern can be square or it can be diamond or a polygon shape. And then within there, you make little pieces that kind of friction fit into each other. And so this has the Kumiko pattern alone on the two doors is like 360 pieces total. And I'm using JT Woodworks. He sent me the jigs and sled. You can make your own, but I'd rather make projects than jigs. And so I've been using his jigs to cut all these tiny little pieces. And so the way the jigs, and there's the end of the, since everything friction fits together, size is important. Repeatability is important. And so you're taking all these pieces are the width of your saw blade, so about a 1/8 inch. And then you're cutting a 45 degree point on one end. And then depending on what's on the other end, it might be a different degree, but you're using the jigs and a chisel to cut the angles and the correct size. And so it's not hard. It's just tedious. And I got blister on my thumb just from holding the piece in the jig and chiseling all day. And sharp chisels are super important. So I was sharpening my chisels throughout. And it's quite the process. I can't wait till I want to do it again, but I want to do the diamond pattern instead of the square pattern because it allows for more, I think, creative options. And so I replace the glass with these two panels. The only thing I have left to do is make door pulls for the two doors, and I'm going to use the cutoffs from the legs to do that. And that video should be out tomorrow.
Oh, cool. And then you're going to cover the whole thing in crayon.
I'm just going to pour crayon on it. Yeah. I haven't, I think I'm going to take it right back to the thrift store and donate it. So
really?
Yeah. Oh, man. I don't know what I'm going to use the cabinet for. It would be great. Daniel, my brother slash
bring
assistant,
it to the 500th and give it
to a drawer. Oh, I could do that.
Yeah, fly with it.
I'll do that. All right. I won't donate it to the thrift store.
Give it to the fans.
The thing is, when I've done some of these Goodwill thrifts. This one's from the Salvation Army. I've done some of these thrift store projects before. And then at the end, I don't say anything. I just show me dropping it off at the donation bin. And it drives people insane.
Have you ever had anybody say, like, reach out and say, hey, I found your whatever that you...
No.
Oh, really?
Wow. No, I've had people say they went to the store that I went, that I took it to, but they said they didn't find it. I'm guessing. I mean, I had a good friend who worked at a Salvation Army. He had first pick of everything that came through the back door.
Mm-hmm. And I think actually, at least with Goodwill, the donations don't, that you drop it off to a store doesn't go to that store. They go to a central. Yeah.
Yeah.
So who knows where it ended
up. An idea, Dave, if you bring that, I'll bring like a leather bag or something. And Bob, you bring something like a piece of the gear to give away to everybody.
Just take a bag of rust. Well, hey, look, I got a bag of rust.
We'll do. Maybe we could do some sort of like, you know, maybe we could play a game of how big is it? Something like that on stage. Give away prizes. I don't know. We'll figure out a random way to choose somebody in the audience.
Yeah, we could do that.
To each one of us, give our thing away.
Cool. Well, this looks really good, man. For some reason, that pattern, doing that work, is really intimidating to me. Because, and it may be actually, in regard to the topic today, I can see it done well in your picture. And I think, yeah, I could do it that well. And then when I did it would not be done that well, and I would be really disappointed with the effort.
It's I don't know if you guys struggle with tedious work, where it's actually not hard. It's just you break things down into steps, and you're cutting all these size pieces first, putting that angle on there, then you're cutting all these size pieces next, putting that angle on there, and then piecing it together. You just have to, we were talking about this on my own personal Discord, you just somebody brought up Pask Makes and said that he loves tedious work. Like, he just built this amazing Tiffany lamp, which is repetitive. And some people just get lost in that process. I don't get lost in the process. I actually like, okay, I got my fill. I want to move on to the next thing. And I think I need to learn to get lost in the process and enjoy all the little details. And I mean, I enjoy details, but doing the same thing over and over again for hours gets pretty old fast to me. And maybe that's the impact of social media on me.
Mm. Yep. Well, it turned out really nice.
Thank you. So,
good job. Let's see. For me, I've been working on a table, which I showed you guys, I think. And it's all aluminum. So I built a kind of a side table for our backyard to put. We got these kind of low lounge chairs. They're not lounge chairs, like a laying down lounge chair. It's like a low sitting lounge chair. And they're pretty low to the ground. So I made a table to put in between them that is only about 16 inches tall. It's real short. But I was trying to come up with something interesting that would survive outdoors and, you know, something I'd never done before. So I ended up making, it's a hexagon. Like the tabletop is a hexagon. And then the sides that come down from that, every side has a triangle that comes down to a point at the ground. Every point of the hexagon has a triangle that comes down to a line. So if you look at the side of it, it's like alternating triangles all the way around the thing.
And aluminum Kamiko? Aluminum Kamiko?
I mean... No. The top and the bottom are both hexagons, and they're offset by 30 degrees. That's, say, if you picture that. But I used the metal fab to cut a pattern out of the sides, half of the sides, and then the other sides are basically just a frame of a triangle. So the whole thing was a little, like, visually different for me, and I was trying to make something that was... I don't know. This sounds weird. Something that's designy, something that had a intentionally designed, not like function only, you know, not function first. And I talked about it in the video a little bit, but basically I recognize where my skill stops in certain things. And when it comes to pattern design or the, like this pattern that you did, looking at that, like I just could not, I would not be able to get there on my own. Coming up with something like that, this is the thing I want to make to put in place. It's just not a skill I have. And so I ended up trying to find a pattern to put in the side of this table. And I ended up just like looking on Etsy, and I was actually trying to look for other tables that had, or other pieces that had pattern work in the side of them to just try to get some inspiration. And I came across somebody that was selling, like, it was like $6, and it was it was 45 or 60 digital patterns, SVG patterns. I'm like, oh, well, somebody else has already done this design work. Why don't I just look through some of those, and if I find the one I want. And so I immediately found a really simple little triangle repeated pattern, but I thought it would work really well with the triangles of, and the hexagon of the thing. And so the video was ended up being kind of about, I know where my limit is, and I know what I want something to look like, but I don't know how to generate the file. And so I'll just pay an artist that can do that, and I'll get the file. And then, you know, and man, once I saw the thing I wanted, got the file, it was like, now I can move ahead again. And I just, the rest of it was easy. But I don't know. So I'm not sure if that'll come through in the video, how that block, how I overcame the block and how much that block actually blocks me on a regular basis. But I'm really happy with the table. I think it looks really cool. And the fact that I got to use like the CNC to cut aluminum was really awesome. I got to aluminum weld. It was incredibly easy. I've had so much trouble with that in the past, trying to TIG weld. I've tried a spool gun with a MIG welder. I've never had any luck with it at all. And the Metal Fab just like was like, push the aluminum button and then hold the trigger and look, you have a perfect aluminum weld. Like, well, huh. So, and then there's this table also has a hole cut in the top of it. And I bought a little cheap solar lantern off Amazon for like $12. And so it's a little puck that has a solar panel on the top of it and a light bulb sticking out of the bottom of it. And it's to hang outside, you know, and it just gives you a little lantern. But so I cut a hole in the top of this table so that that drops in. So when the sun goes down, it lights up from the inside of the table and all of those pattern panels then shine the light out and down onto the ground because it's so close to the ground. So that was another part of the intention of like making the table in the first place is having a little kind of ambient light to sit outside with. And so the final shots of the video the other night, I was like, okay, I'm going to set this thing up with the sunset behind it and you'll see the table next to the chairs and then do a time lapse of the sun going down. And as the sun goes down, you'll see the light come on and you'll be able to see it, you know, and I'm like, this is going to be a great shot. And I get it all framed up and get the camera out there, the time-lapse set up, and it's beautiful outside, you know. And then about halfway through the time-lapse, the sun is going down. It gets like to where you can start to see the sun itself. And then a storm cloud blows in and just starts dumping rain before the sun went down. And so I'm 2 hours into this time lapse and I have to go out there and rescue the everything, you know, get it all out of the, so tonight I have to set all that up again and try to get the time lapse.
Did that make it into the video? Because
I don't know yet. I don't know.
The funny thing is, so I am working on the Kumiko pattern. And as I'm like, I'm picking and choosing when I'm talking. And so I go back and forth. I might do a couple hours of just work. And then I go in and I'm like, okay, I'm going to talk for 5 minutes while I'm doing this cut. And while I'm doing this cut with this chisel, a huge thunderclap happens right in the middle of my sentence. And I'm like, did you hear that? That was crazy. And then I took the camera outside and I show it just pouring down rain.
Oh,
and
nice.
It may have been the same storm that you went through. And so I'm wondering
It was crazy, but and mostly just annoying because it's like the last shot, you know, it's
right,
the one
right.
That I need to
I'm
get
trying to
now.
Finish this up.
Yeah. So the table's done and I'm starting to work on the next thing. I've been working a lot on the pool shed. I think I talked to you guys about that, you know, and After talking about it on here, man, I got something in my throat. I had somebody reach out who has reached out before about the A-frame, a guy named Byron, and he's an architect. And so he was like, hey, if you need any help, you know, figuring out, because I was saying that I'm learning all the stuff about loads and spans and all this stuff. And so basically I've sent him some of my drawings, the Fusion drawings, like with measurements on them and everything, kind of explained what I was doing. And so he's given me feedback on like if I'm doing it correctly, which has been super helpful. Give me a lot more confidence and help me solve some problems. So I'm like moving along. I solved some of the questions there. So I'm like, all right, now I can actually start modeling out every part of it. And I'm like putting sheathing on the outside of it. And I'm figuring, so I can figure out how many sheets I need. And, you know, it's like almost done. And I was talking to my dad the other night. I was telling him about this building and how it had all come together and everything. And through the conversation, I realized that I had been thinking about the square footage of the building being the interior space. And he told me that one time he was dealing with the city about a deck that he was, a covered deck. And they classified the square footage as area with a roof, not inside space, because it was an outside, you know, it's a deck. It doesn't have any inside space. And so then I looked this up before and I never could find anything about it. But then I talked to an engineering friend of mine, a civil engineer, and he said, yeah, it's going to be anything that has a roof over it. So then I had to go back to my drawing and start measuring things. And it's way too big to avoid getting a permit. I was trying to avoid getting a permit because anything under 200 square feet, you don't have to deal with that. You get to save money. You don't have to deal with the approvals and all that stuff. It's way too big. So now I'm trying to figure out how to go about, like, do I just bite the bullet and pay for a permit? Or do I try to cut corners somewhere and, like, make the overhangs smaller on the roof? I don't know. So that's where I'm at right now. It's just a drag because I was moving ahead, making real progress and starting to plan like, okay, now I know the steps here. I have the design. I can actually start, you know, building my materials list and all that stuff. And now I'm having to back up.
That's a video. Now you're dependent on somebody else to approve something, which affects the timing of the video. Yeah, it stinks.
Which is a big part of why I was trying to avoid it. I just don't want to be hamstrung by, you know, waiting on somebody who may be really responsive, but you just never know.
Yeah.
And since it's the first building I'm making, the likelihood of me doing something wrong from a code perspective or, you know, from their approval perspective is pretty high, I would say. Like, no matter how hard I try, I'm probably going to get something wrong.
It's best to always get everybody involved because if you're halfway through it, they could technically tell you to take it down.
Well, I mean, yeah, if it's over the square footage, but, you know, if it's under that, then I guess unless it was like a real risk, you know, like if it was putting someone in danger, I don't think they would actually do anything.
Could you split hairs and build two things that are under the limit?
Oh, well, that's interesting. And then just slide them together.
Well, that's kind of the first step I did because the whole thing is it's going to have two roof lines, right? So it has an interior space with one long span, and then it's called a half monitor roof where you have
you mentioned it last week.
So the lower part, I was like, well, that could be built separately. So if I leave that off, it keeps the building under 200. I can build the building. It's done. And then I can come back later and add this little roof on the side of it. Then we started talking about the roof line thing, and I realized that the overhangs on the roof are the thing that make it over 200. It's like 216 square feet or something. Like, it's stupid, you know? Maybe it won't be a big deal, but I would hate to get into that and then, you know, get fined for I don't know. So I might just
What's the holdup? Is you just avoiding paying for a permit?
Well, it's not paying. I mean, I'm sure permits are probably not cheap. So I would like to not pay for that. But the bigger thing is what David said, is just like getting approval, having to wait on somebody to get out there and tell me if I did it right or wrong. And then, And I'm doing my best to look into the code, make sure that I'm doing it correctly. I have this architect, but you know, my engineer friend has given me some advice too, and I'm trying to do it correctly. I'm not trying to cut corners, but I just don't want to have to wait on somebody to tell me that I did or didn't do it right. You know what I mean?
You might get lucky. The guy who's in charge might be a fan. Things go
easier.
Not
likely.
You might get lucky. It's talking from experience.
I may just go down to the city and, you know, like talk to somebody and say, like, this is what I'm doing. It's going to be 216 square feet. Like, how big of a deal is that?
And you go and say you're asking for a friend.
Yeah.
You know, you say you're asking for a friend unless you're willing to say it's for you.
Yeah.
Then you got to get involved in the permitting process and they'll look you up and then they'll watch every single thing you do.
And that's fine. I mean, it's not, like, I'm not trying to like skirt responsibility or anything. Yeah. I have to think about it in regard to if I'm going to make multiple videos out of it and they're sponsored, then I have commitments on time. And, you know, especially if we were able to get, I don't know, somebody to sponsor the lumber or something, then that's going to have a requirement with it because it's a pretty significant, you know, material injection that a company would be making. And so I can't just be like, yeah, sorry, it's going to take another 3 months to put the video out because I'm waiting on this dude who, you know, from the small town to come out and just say I did it right. So anyway, that's where that's at. But I am really happy with the fact that I've been able to learn more about the design process and been able to model. Like, I've modeled it maybe further than I should, you know, like every stud, every overlap, every piece of sheathing, all the roof, like it's all there. And so I think I could make legit drawings out of it if I actually needed to. So it feels cool to go down that path. But the only other thing is there was the yearly car show that our small town has every year. It was this past weekend. And unfortunately, I didn't get to go to, there's kind of two parts to it. There's a lake here with a big park. And so on Friday night, a bunch of people just drive out there and they park in the grass in the field. And so you can just walk through this big field of old cars. And it's really cool. And that's my favorite part. Then that night when the sun goes down, they all cruise from there to downtown. And it's this big parade of, you know, several hundred old cars. And they cruise downtown. And a lot of them go ahead and park their car downtown for the next day. And on Saturday, they shut down downtown and everybody just walks through and looks at cars and there's bands and stuff like that. And it was oppressively hot this weekend, so we didn't do a lot of the stuff. We were only down there walking through the cars for just a little while, but and a lot of them had already left because it was so hot. But there were a couple of cars that one I saw a 280Z, which was in really good shape, and seeing one up close for the first time several years, I'm just like, I want that car.
Wow.
I don't need that car. I'm not going to get that car. But seeing it, I'm like, man, that's such a cool car. And so that's still on my list. But it was cool to be able to just happen upon one of those. There's also a, I don't know what the color is called, but it's like a sparkly powder blue. Maybe not powder. It's a light blue. And it was a 67 Stingray Corvette. Absolutely beautiful car. Like, there's a lot of really cool shaped cars, but that thing is, it stands alone as far as the design of a vehicle. It is, it's beautiful. I mean,
they're really good looking cars.
It's just something else. And, you know, you see pictures of stuff like that, but to see one right there just parked on the street and get to walk around it, it's an absolutely beautiful car. Anyway, so we did a little bit of that this weekend, but that's what I've been up to. You had an idea for a little topic, David. What was that?
Yeah, the gap.
45 minutes in.
Sorry. The gap of what you want to make to what you actually make. And I go through this a lot, and I think I'm dealing a little bit with it with the thrift store table is you get it. You get started and you're like, this is going to be the greatest thing I ever make. And I'm going to do all these things. And then when you're done, it feels a little bit less than, And I do, I feel this on a lot of projects. I'm like, I tell myself I want to get out there with design. I want to push myself. And then I end up making a thing that is me. It's a thing that I've, you know, made before. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. It doesn't feel like I'm always pushing myself. And I don't know if there's a gap of what I want to make to what I actually make, and wanted to discuss if you guys feel the same thing.
Well, we talked before we got started, and I said what our brains tend to do, at least I started to realize, is that our brains create an AI version. Now that AI is an actual thing and something we can wrap up. For years we've been hearing AI. Who knew what that meant, right? Now we know what it means, at least as far as visual thinkers go. You could tell AI to make this, that, and the other thing, and then it creates a slick, beautiful drawing in this landscape that's perfect. And that's what I think our brains do when we think of something. We want to make this car into this other thing. You know, we want to make this old Cadillac into a beautiful Woody, and you have this image in your head, but then when you start connecting material together, it's not quite. It's like waking up and having a dream about some perfect relationship, and then waking up and the relationship's not perfect, or circumstance, or the visit, or the place you go to. I think our brains whitewash or slick it up.
Yeah.
And then when we make it, then there's the reality of, oh, the nail holes are showing.
Well, so this is a thing. Like, I've purchased a couple of old metal toolboxes, and this was when I was starting to get into the bodywork when I had the Impala. Like, I want to take an old toolbox and incorporate some sort of like curves into it. So like take ideas from a 280Z, but put that on a toolbox. So it's more than just, you know, right? And so when you have this idea in your head, you're like, this is going to be the greatest toolbox of all time. And then you start sketching it out and you're like, it doesn't work. Like, what? There's the gap of what you see in your head, which I don't see crazy details. I can just see kind of like silhouettes and shapes and what it could be. And then you start designing and you're like, this is stupid.
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of both of what you're saying is like your mind's eye version of a thing is the ideal. And so from one perspective, you're never going to be able to get to that. You know, I mean, there's material flaws, there's time constraints, there's just experience level or whatever. So you're never going to be able to 100% get to the ideal, which is the thing that your brain is going to see, because your brain is always going to want to see the best version of something. If you have an idea.
Oh, that's true.
You're not going to come up with an idea and be like, you know, I think it needs to be a little bit more crappy. And yeah, oh yeah, there's the crappy version. That's the one I'm going to go for. You know, your brain is going to go for the top, the best, the finished, the perfect. And so you're never going to quite get there. That doesn't mean you shouldn't try. But so I don't know. I think for me, I'd do a similar thing, not necessarily from a design perspective, because we've talked about that. But I think from it needs to do this. In my mind, when I have an idea, it's like I'm working on something right now and I'm just barely starting to think through the mechanics of it and the function of what it needs to do. And it starts in this big, vague, well, it just has to do, all it has to do is this. Yeah, you know, like, sure, how hard could that be? Whatever. And then the more I think about it, I have to start actually planning the mechanics. How do things fit together? What is the piece that I have to create to make this thing connect to that? And how does it move and stuff like that? And it takes me until I'm physically doing it to
actualize what that is.
Yeah, to actualize that actual thing, the thing that has to be created. And up until then, it's an ideal, easy, how hard could it be thing.
Yeah.
And then when I get to it, I'm like,
the details.
Physically no way this could work at all. Well, like, it's just, it's a similar problem in that I think of the best, the easiest, and then the closer I get to it, the more details show up and the harder it gets and the more
problem solving really starts to reveal itself. Yeah. That's what, when we did the TV show, the guys listening that worked in the show are going to laugh, because Mike, the producers, would always ask, could you give me a script of how you're going to build this? could you give me basically a shot by shot? I go, I have no idea how I'm going to do it. He's like, how could you not know how you're going to do it? I was like, there's so many decisions that have to be made in the very second that I'm going to attach this plywood to that. I go, I can't give you exactly what this is going to roll out as. I said, just follow along and find the fun. I said, it's going to present itself because eventually there's going to be a dinosaur standing in front of us, but exactly how I'm going to attach it shot for shot, I go, I can't give you that. I totally get. And that was the first episode when we built the dinosaur. Then when I'm going to, something so funny I'm going to send you guys right now. And then when I did the shot for shot, we started going, the cameraman had a great time following along, and then the process became easier. But he was just nervous. He didn't know how to plan his shots. It's like, you're going to have to just follow and make it happen.
One of my favorite movie quotes is Back to the Future. I think the quote goes, watch me for the changes and try to keep up. When he's talking to the band.
Yes, that was great.
So, David, does this gap, does it frustrate you, or is it just something you notice when you finish a project? And it's just like, well, that's just the way it is.
By the way, guys, this is available at Harbor Freight right now. I'm sending you a picture.
Uh-oh.
So it's already been done. It's a nose of a 280ZX with a toolbox incorporated into it.
Oh, that's weird looking.
The wheels on there.
The phone's listening to us, I told you.
Yeah, I
did it while we were talking. I plugged it into ChatGPT. Can you make a mechanics toolbox that looks like a car 280ZX?
Crazy.
See, a little bit of both. I keep, I think my own expectations and my own pressures that I put on myself, I'm like, I want to make the thing that's going to define me as a creator, right? This piece is going to, this is an exaggeration, of course, but this is the piece that is going to turn all my haters into lovers. I'm like, I'm going to win people over because they can finally see what my vision is. And then when I'm done, it's like, well, maybe the next one. Maybe the next one will turn heads.
Well, the reason I ask that is because I think a lot of how frustrating that gap is, or how frustrating the end result is, has to do with what your expectation was in the first place, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you make a video and you're like, this is the project aside, this video is going to be the viral one. This is going to be the one that's going to get 8 billion views and going to, you know, push me onto the trending page and, like, you know, whatever. If that's the goal, you will be disappointed 100% of the time. Unless you're Mark Rober, like, that just doesn't happen, right? Or Colin Furze. And so if the expectation is that, then you're setting yourself up to be disappointed in the thing. But like in your case, I think the more realistic, I'm not telling you how to feel, I'm just, from my perspective, it would seem more realistic to, like, you are adding to your body of work as an artist. This thing is just one more brick in the wall of why people like what I do. Or how people see the work that I've done, you know?
Yeah. That's a great way to look at it. I think having this little gap is also somewhat necessary for the way I approach things, because I need to keep pushing myself. I need a reason. I'm like, okay, I'm not satisfied. I'm going to do better next time. I'm going to push myself more next time. And so I think I need that. My brain creates these little hurdles on purpose to push myself.
That's probably good. I mean, people need the motivation to try to improve and everything. Yeah. I think for me, when you said that, I'm like, I don't think I feel like I need to outdo myself or quality-wise or anything. But I think the same feeling I get is when I find another problem to try to come up with a solution for. You know, it's like, I don't necessarily have to do it better than I did it before, but just finding another one feels...
That's why iteration is so important with design and invention.
What's that?
Iterate. Make it over and over again.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Never do anything twice.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. Somebody said to me yesterday, they go, hey, can you, this Woody's really cool. You're going to drive it to California. I was like, maybe not this one, but maybe when I get a late model Suburban, and I do it to that. Maybe that one I'll drive to California. So I'm already
thinking
of that.
That would be rad, man. Do that.
Like if I got like a modern Suburban, like, I don't know, 2020 or something, and make that into a wood.
I got a 2019, I'll sell you. How about that?
And then I'll make that into a wood.
That would be so cool.
Yeah, you know, for sure.
Like a retro mod. How cool would that be? That would be cool.
Well, so with the gap, is there, other than just knowing that you want to be pushed, you know, every project, you want to do better, is there anything you can do to, I don't want to say make it better, but like plan for it? Or
yeah, I think, I mean, for me, it's like, I'm not looking for a solution.
Yeah.
I think I'm just talking about what's going on in my head. And so I think I'm just going to keep pushing. I'm just going to just keep getting better. And like you said, just add to the body of work. And, you know, when I look at other, if I'm going through Instagram, like you see everybody's best work and you don't see the path they took to get there. You're just seeing I just want to be right there, you know.
But don't forget, everybody has the same thing when they see what we do. They don't realize the decision, the compromises that we've made when you show anything. Even then,
yeah.
You see like the best work that somebody else has made and you go, hey, from experience, you know, that's a compromise. That's not exactly what they wanted, but that's a compromise. And most
I'm
cases.
Also running. I'm running out of time, Jimmy. I'm 50 years old now.
Yeah, yeah. I'm 58. I know. The treadmill goes faster and faster.
I got a long ways to go before I get to my goal.
Yeah,
but yeah, no, that's it, it's the amount of compromise you're willing to tolerate before you decide to do it again. Yeah, you know what? This is good. This is good. And the worst part is when you deal with people that are paying for what you're doing. That's the worst part, because it's like you're compromising what you expect them to think and what you want to think and what you really want to put into it and the time and the energy. And then, you know, there's always that meter. These meters are all going of like, do I like it? Do I hate it? Am I wasting my money? Is it costing me money? Am I earning money? Like there's like that control panel that you see in your heads up display that is constantly. And then all of a sudden, like when things go completely wrong, when the client goes, is that what it's going to look like? And, you know, you, in your mind, you're done. And then the client says that, and it's like, that's what's going on in your heads up display. And you got to, it's like damage control, begin now. And you're like, well, this is kind of the picture you approved. And, you know,
I have a question for you. When you make something for yourself where there's no limitations, and when you make something for a client or customer where there's expectations, and there might be the limitations, because when you're making something for a client, it doesn't have to be this sculptural piece of art. It has to be what they are looking for.
Yeah,
when you're making for yourself, there's no ceiling. Do you put more pressure on yourself when you're making something that's
I put less. Well, for instance, I'm using the Woody as an example because it's what's in the shop. I just said, I'm having a hard time joining some things. And I was like, let me get the joints close and then I'll just fill them in with Bondo. And then wood and Bondo are two different materials. Wood doesn't look like Bondo. So there are certain joints in certain parts of the door, especially the back door where there's lots of curves. I just Bondoed in to make the transition smoother, because that's what I really wanted to look like, but I didn't plan enough for the wood. So I didn't start with a big enough piece of wood to cut that transition into it. And then when I made it, that really needs a smoother transition. Let me just slather some Bondo in there. And now you have this beautiful flowing wooden door. And then where the curves start to become a little bit more flowy, it's all pink or blue. And a couple of people come in the shop like, how are you going to hide the Bondo? I said, I'm not going to hide the Bondo. I don't care. Because it's my sculpture. But if this was for a client and I had to make a door, a flowing door, I could have gotten to this point where I'm at right now. Now I can see exactly what I want to do. Now the vision is nailed out in front of me. Now I could get the piece of wood that's big enough to cut that curve into it before I do the joinery. You know, that's the problem, is I'm working with 4x4s. I'm not working with like 4x6s, because then I could, in a 4x6, I could put a nice flowy curve without having to add lots of pieces and then maybe even some Bondo. So now I've basically created what I want to make and I could make it again. Now I know exactly what it is. I'm not finding it in the dark. It's there now, but it's got Bondo on it. I don't think it's going to take away from it. It is a rat rod after all. It's going to have blotchy rust spots on it. And every time you slam the door, rust falls out from underneath it. And even though it's got this beautiful structure on the back, this is certain compromises we make.
I mean, you could also like fake paint over the Bondo to kind of just hide it enough to make it look like wood.
Trump Loy. I thought about that. Breaking out the oils and the acrylics and the brushes and just like casual. Like once I put the poly over everything and it pops, all the grain pops, then I'll know exactly where I'll need it. And I might break out some acrylics and just disguise it a little bit. Disguise it a little. Or set it back with like a little mist of spray paint or whatever. But we'll see how it stands out. Or just leave it because it's kind of part of the process. It's not overbearing. It's just in certain spots.
Yeah. Cool. Any other thoughts on this from you all?
I think he's just got to make it again and again. That's what I always say. Make it again.
We'll see.
Dave's like, I'm not making anything again, ever.
I think it would be a good series of videos. It would be a good exercise and a series of videos to remake something over and over again. And I think a chair would... I did make the same chair twice. I did a prototype out of plywood, and then I made one out of walnut. And there were changes because you're doing the iteration. I don't know if there's a hit YouTube series where you get to see the development of a much more complicated project.
Hmm. Cool. Well, do that.
Sure. I'll start this week.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters, who hopefully most of them will be at the Making It 500. I doubt most of them will be there, but hopefully a lot of them will be there.
Bob, what are you going to bring to giveaway?
Oh, I don't know. I will have to find something. I've got lots of stuff. Does it have to be something I made or just something I own?
You 3D print something.
Yeah, it's boring.
Yeah, but you could do like 3D print something that like you had to glue together and sand and paint.
Yeah, that's a lot of work to give away. I don't know. I'll figure it out.
You could 3D print something you don't have to do anything to except pop off of the base.
Yeah. And that's, I'll find something. but big thanks to our Patreon supporters who do keep the show going. They, make it so we don't have to have sponsors, and that's really, really cool. We are very grateful for that. We have top supporters over there that are above and beyond, and I hope, and I know a few of them are coming, but I hope a lot of them are coming, so I can say thank you. But that is Pete Rondeau, A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., Matthias Garnau, Michael Menigin, Warren Works, The New Janky Workshop, Scott, A Daddy Yourself DIY, Sean Beckner, Odin Leather Goods, Rich at Low End Design, Chad from Mancrafting, Works by Solo, Albers Woodworks, Corey Ward, and Nick Ryan. But also, there are people like Eugene Stevens.
Thank you.
Who have been supporting for a very long time. Over 4 years, Eugene. Awesome. We're grateful for everybody. All the help, every level, it means a lot to us. And they all get the after show, which is more show after this one. And I'm going to tell you about this burn mark on my finger in the after show today. And to get that, you have to be a Patreon supporter. It's the only way you get the link for the after show. It's on Patreon. So if you go to patreon.com/makingit and then sign up at any level, you get that. You can add it to your podcast player. You can get the link to watch it on YouTube. But that's how you get it. So go over there and join up. We would appreciate it. Or just keep listening. Don't join up. That's fine, too. What you got, David? You had your hand up. You're muted.
During the podcast, I sent you photos of the before and after of the table and the wall hanging cabinet. I had being away from the project and just seeing the photo that I took that I sent you. I have decided to change something up. You know, sometimes things are never finished, and I'll talk about how I'm going to change something up. In the after show. But yeah, I was almost done. Now I think there's one more thing it needs.
Gotcha.
Especially if I'm going to be giving it away to somebody at the event.
Yeah, there's a different kind of pressure to that. Yeah. Like, here you go. Just don't look at this little part right here.
This is the thing. So, you know what? I'll save it for the after show. There's little flaws that I don't want people to see, but now people are going to see it. I'll talk about it in the after show.
Okay. Cool. Well, you guys got anything to recommend this week?
Oh, we're doing that.
We don't have to. Before you say, I'm going to say Pask makes Tiffany lamp. Did I say that a couple weeks ago? I probably did.
I don't think so.
Go watch it again. Pask makes, he makes a Tiffany lamp, and just watching his process, it just the way he problem solves is great.
Yeah. I have one of his marking knives. It is just a beautiful, beautiful tool that was gifted to me from my stepdad. It is so beautiful. My pick this
I just saw the thumbnail for that lamp. That is ridiculous.
Tedious work.
But he breaks it down into digestible processes, which was really good problem solving.
So my pick this week is going to be, and I've picked this channel before, but I'm going to do it again because it has been on the forefront of my mind, and that is JT Woodworks, who does the Kumiko stuff. I'm using his jigs and his sled. He's a master at this technique. You got to check him out. He's really good.
Awesome.
I know, Judge. When it comes to Maker Camp area, good dude.
Oh, okay.
Mine is Anne of All Trades had a baby.
Oh, yes, of course.
And she put a video out about the process.
Yeah, it was touching.
Man.
The process, about the process.
She made it
in the workshop. Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah. She starts crying, and then I started crying.
Oh,
my gosh. I'm so happy for them. And, they're both very so cool.
Sweet.
And they're going to be amazing parents. I'm just so happy for them. But they've had a lot that goes into them, has gone into them being able to have a kid, and it's just awesome to see. So should follow her anyway, but you should definitely go watch the video because it's just super sweet. Pretty excited for them. You guys got anything else for this week?
That is all.
Cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Catch you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Love you. Thank you.